Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 345. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are James Jones.
Well, except for last week.
Yeah, back from the dead. And Guillaume Veillette.
I might not be there next week.
back to the dead. Since John could not join us this week, unfortunately, I think he will be
as
back
always.
Next week.
Are you just starting the with us as always thing as irony now?
No, I only say it about you and Guillaume. I don't say it about John. So anyway, John's not here, unfortunately, this week, but substituting, we have our friend Kim Keller.
Hey.
Welcome to RFN. I mean, you heard Kim on the E3 episodes, and she's been on Connectivity, but she's a newbie here at RFN, and we're excited to have her. And James is editing this week, so we're not completely sure what we're going to do in the second segment of the show. But we're at least going to start out with a brief fall preview of games coming out on the Wii U. Just kind of to look at the overall lineup, which we kind of talked about around E3 or right after it. But that was mostly focused on the new announcements. There's quite a bit of stuff coming out, though. There's some third-party things that didn't really show up at E3, but will still be released. So we're going to talk about that kind of stuff after the break. And first up is, of course, new business. So I'm going to kick off new business this time because I've been playing a Wii U game we never really talked about on the show, or I guess very briefly. I played a little bit with TUIP once, but that is Call of Duty Black Ops 2. I've had this for a few months. I got it when it was really cheap at Best Buy one weekend, but I haven't really played it very much other than a bit of multiplayer like I mentioned before. And I've really been wanting to get into the campaign, especially because I know it's a short game and I can sort of blast through it. And the other thing is, I remember seeing it at E3 last year, and I was really intrigued by the things they're doing with the single-player game in Black Ops 2, and it's not like anything they've really done in Call of Duty before. So I was kind of excited to see them really starting to push the formula after many, many, many iterations of something less sophisticated. And, you know, they do stuff like there's branching paths a little bit, so some missions will be optional, and supposedly if you fail certain missions, it'll take you down another path and maybe get you a different ending or play a different mission or something. They've also added these missions that are in the future, so you get access to some cool, like, conduit-style technology that you've never really seen in a Call of Duty game before, and that's pretty fun. There's some really, really neat, like, showpieces, kind of like interactive cutscenes that you start out. You're climbing the side of a mountain with these, like, magical techno sticky gloves like Tom Cruise had in Mission Impossible 4. And then they also have wingsuits, and you get to kind of nominally control these things. But, you know, most of the stage is it really actually reminded me a lot of The Conduit, because you're kind of blasting through this facility, and it's very enclosed and shiny looking, and you have all these wacky, like, high-powered rifles that seek out targets and stuff like that. But it's a fun level, and, you know, that's not the entire game. You also play stuff in the 70s and the 80s, and I don't know when else, because I haven't finished, but... I think there is a lot more going on in the single-player campaign. And they also have a different kind of mission where you have these strategic elements where you're jumping around. It actually reminded me of Battle Zone. Yeah, Battle Zone, the old PC game.
All wireframes?
No. It's the more modern remake of that.
Oh, so the not-as-old PC game.
Right, from around 2000. 99, 2000, I think.
The kind of old...
Or yep. Battalion Wars is probably a much easier example here. It's actually a lot like Battalion Wars, believe it or not, because you are sort of masterminding the battlefield. You have multiple groups of different asymmetric units. You have a tank, and you have soldiers, and you have a gun emplacement. And you're pushing these things around and trying to put them at choke points and stuff as the enemy comes in, but you have to keep redoing it because the enemy comes in at different points. And then you can also take control directly of any one of those units and you know, contribute a little extra oomph to the fight, which is exactly like Battalion Wars, from what I understand about it.
Did you not play Battalion Wars?
No, I've never played Battalion Wars, except at E3. Oh my
God. Yes, that's exactly what Battalion Wars is like.
Okay, good, I'm not crazy.
Wow, that doesn't
so those missions...
Anything.
those missions seem pretty fun and challenging. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. And, you know, I'm guessing I'm at least a third of the way through it after playing it for like 2 hours. So it's definitely a bite-sized thing, which I kind of need in my life right now. So looking forward to playing more of that. But again, it just, you know, the announcement that Call of Duty Ghosts is finally confirmed for Wii U this year. We just heard about that last week, and it sort of reminded me, hey, I should really, you know, actually play Black Ops 2 because I was excited about it. And yeah, it's good. I recommend it. If you're looking for a Wii U game and you're not a fan of Pikmin, then, you know, go find a cheap copy of it.
And is the whole enemies will keep coming out forever until you move to this point on the map? Like, is that still a thing in the series, or
I'd say on certain missions it does feel that way, but then the futuristic level, you know, where I was inside a sort of defined enclosed building, it felt much more like, you know, hunt everybody down. And so I don't think it had enemy closets like some of the other levels. Most of the time, if it's a big kind of open level, there's actually one that's very kind of free roaming, which is unusual for Call of Duty. You have a horse and you can jump on it and move around this very large area and kind of deal with, have a choice of things that you want to deal with sometimes. So that was pretty cool also. But yeah, I think, you know, certain stages are very much programmed out like roller coaster rides, you know, and yes, the enemies will keep coming, but they also are constantly doing things that drive you to keep moving forward. So it's not like it feels artificial. It's like, hey, this thing just exploded behind you, you better move. Or, hey, this guy's calling you, he's telling you you need to come over here. So I feel like camping out behind cover and like trying to kill every enemy has never worked in Call of Duty. So I really doubt that many people would get bogged down in that. Or you'll find out very quickly it's not a good tactic.
Right.
Well, how's like the artificial intelligence of your allies? Because I've heard mixed things about this one in particular, that a lot of times you're kind of doing all your missions like on your own, but with the computer players not really doing their part.
Well, yeah. Like, the thing about Call of Duty, my opinion is that they always try to give you the illusion that you're playing with a squad, but you're not really. Because generally there's characters scattered around the battlefield and they know your name and they'll say, hey, come over here, or hey, take this and go over there. But those are essentially cutscenes. And between each cutscene, you're on your own regardless.
They up the illusion by having things like tracer rounds sort of buzzing around that you didn't fire. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, they're shooting at things. I mean, occasionally they do kill enemies, but it feels mostly like they're just shooting in the general direction of the enemy. And if it hits, it hits.
Yeah, but also that enemy that they killed probably wouldn't have been the difference between you
probably not
progressing or not, you know. Because you, a lot of times you should just ignore enemies in this game. You know, it depends on whether they've got you pinned down or they're blocking your path. But in a lot of cases, it's better to just keep running, which I'm fine with. I mean, that seems like, you know, has some smacks of realism, at least in a game about war. So sometimes the best way to survive is just to keep moving. I'm fine with that. I don't want to have to stand there like an idiot and just shoot every single person in sight.
Well, that's what the first Modern Warfare kind of felt like sometimes. Just, all right, just shoot all the things very slowly. Proceed through big closed areas until you get through the end of it. It's kind of weird in general, the single-player squad-based shooter. Because
it's not really squad based.
Well, no, but there is a squad of people.
Yeah, but it's not squad based in the sense that like there's three or four guys who are programmed to follow you around the whole time and take commands from you or something. You know,
the question really is always, would that even be any more accurate than just having them more or less shooting into the wind? It's kind of a handoff. Would it be better if they just sort of did stuff that makes sense?
Oh,
like they made
sure.
Their own decisions. They practice real decision making as opposed to basically doing whatever you tell them to blindly or just doing nothing in particular.
Actually, on the subject of AI, James, I mean, I know you have a lot of interest in this area. Do you think with the more powerful consoles, the PS4 and Xbox One that are coming out this year, is there really going to be kind of a step change in AI quality, or is it just always one of the last things that anybody puts any resources to?
The reality of the situation is you can do, I mean, not hyper-sophisticated AI, but you're not trying to do anything that complicated. You're just trying to model the behavior of the characters in the game after human characters, after how a human would play the game. And that,
I think you're trying to do the minimum necessary to create that illusion.
Right, and it's really easy to just watch people play the game and learn how a character in a similar position should behave. It doesn't really take a tremendous amount of processing power to do that convincingly enough. So it's mostly a matter of just taking the time and trying. And I think there's always the potential downside of you have a situation where if you wait too heavily, in a shooter is a great example, if you wait too heavily behaving like human player characters, you come into the battlefield and both the enemy and your allies are bunny hopping around, and it would just not make any sense. So I think the primary reason we don't see it is that it's hard. I mean, it's not supremely difficult, but it's hard to do in such a way that it makes a significant impact on the experience the player gets in game. I think primarily what you might see is less objective-based decisioning, where it's just like, I need to go there, so I'm going to run there, fire on me, be damned. And you may see some more conditional decisioning. But ultimately, I don't know that we're going to get a big change in that unless developers are liberated in some way by having more power that they can don't have to spend as much time doing other things. They can really not have to worry about things like optimizing. They would need... Really, they need to find time in the dev schedule more than hardware resources. It's a long answer for a short question, but the answer is mostly no.
Well, that answers
you could have gone with that.
I could have, but then it would have been why.
So that was Call of Duty.
Call of Lops.
What James just said. Yeah, no, I am impressed with the game, and I would recommend that people check it out. And hopefully, since Treyarch is also doing the port of Call of Duty Ghosts on Wii U, you know, hopefully it's at least as good as this, and I would hope a lot better. So I think they had made some pretty good improvement on the Wii games over the course of doing three or four of them. So I'm hoping they'll learn and continue to do another good version of it. All right, so the other game I've been playing this week is one that it's a PC game, but I think it will interest our listeners. And I think first heard about it on some other podcasts, so it has been talked about quite a bit lately. It's called Rogue Legacy, and I got it on the Steam sale for, I don't know, a couple bucks off, not that much. And it's really, I guess it's meant to be kind of a roguelike, but with that formula applied to a 2D platformer. So, and the thing that kind of tipped me off that it might be something I would enjoy is that I'd heard that it really was not like a very easy roguelike, like very forgiving. And there's an unusual amount of persistence between sessions of the game. And so you always feel like you're making some kind of progress. And that's true. And that's a lot of the reason that I have enjoyed the game so far. So Rogue Legacy plays more like, it's like a Castlevania game, but faster. But that's pretty much how it plays. So it's, you know, running, jumping, using your big sword. And it's goofy looking, but it is definitely challenging, and it gets hard very quickly. And you'll die very quickly. And once you die, the game is over, and you go back to the start screen. But the first step in starting the next session of the game is that you choose the heir of your previous adventurer, and you had, it's basically like genetic selection or something like that. There's three different versions of the heir, and they have different attributes, different attacks, and genetic traits that they pass along. And you pick one, and then you get a chance to spend all the money that they inherited from their father or mother, actually. And you can spend that on upgrades to the castle that increase your stats. You can spend it on equipment that gives you huge stat bonuses and other abilities and magic runes that let you do double jumps and things like that. And then you go through and try again, and then you'll die again, and the whole thing starts over. So what that means is they take away your life and make you start over, but they never take away anything else. So anything that you find in terms of inventory, money, stuff like that, always carries through to the next life. And it makes an incredibly difficult and sort of impenetrable game completely possible because you're always constantly getting better, and it gives it much more of an RPG feel where you're sort of trading time for convenience or for ease. And it's just very addictive and really fun. Yeah, ease. So it's very fast-paced. You can play through several sessions in the span of 20 minutes, which is kind of how I've been doing it so far. And it plays with a controller. I mean, it'd be hard to imagine playing this without a controller, really. So it's like, why is this game only on PC? It's super fun. It's very affordable. It's high quality. It's a really interesting concept and a fun, like, 16-bit style graphic style. And, you know, surely this is not going to be a PC exclusive for long. I mean, I think this would be really great as a download console title, but also it would be wonderful to have on something like 3DS because it is kind of a shorter experience. It's very you can break it up into small pieces. And the other thing I thought about in terms of a potential 3DS port, so one of the genetic traits that you can pass along to the next person in the family tree is a lack of stereo vision. So, and it says you can't see in 3D. Well, the game doesn't support 3D as far as I can tell. I think it's one of several genetic traits that is really just a joke and doesn't do anything. Another one is gay, which is an interesting kind of social commentary on the players, on the developers' part. And that also has no apparent effect whatsoever on gameplay. But with the lack of 3D, it's like, oh, you could turn that joke into a real kind of neat trick in the game where it turns off the 3D display if you get that trait. And that might be distracting enough if you're used to playing it. It actually would be really awesome if it could force it on, even if you had it turned off, because that would be a great counter trait, one of the negative traits that you end up with sometimes. But Nintendo would probably never let that happen.
Because of the kids and their eyes.
Yeah. Well, they could, if you rated this T or M, and you know, it's only on the eShop, so ideally kids shouldn't be able to buy it without some kind of supervision. I mean, I would make that
Johnny
argument,
hates
but I kind of doubt Nintendo would bend on it. Anyway, that's Rogue Legacy. I think it's worth the hype. Got off to kind of a slow start for me, but as you would kind of hope for, the more you play it, the more things you kind of open up. It lets you stay alive longer. It lets you do more interesting things. And pretty soon, I kind of slid into this nice routine where I really felt like I was getting better and better. So, really fun game. Okay, Guillaume is up next for new business, and I get a break.
Yeah, well, I'm still kind of always trying to find a short game that I can play through while I'm not mired in Shin Megami Tensei 4, but let's face it, it's going to be a long game, and I don't want to be talking about it every week. And I don't want to be buying a new game every week because I'm not made of money. So I thought, well, why not play through one of the VC games that I got recently for 30 cents and never really actually played?
We're not going to talk about Balloon Fight, are we?
Well, yes, a 30-minute discussion about Punch-Out. No, I played Super Metroid, and I did, you know, like, it's probably the only
so a 30-minute discussion about Super Metroid. Okay.
Yes. It's probably, like, the only game in that promotion that I actually put any time into, because it's actually probably the only one of the bunch that I actually like, love a lot. And when I got it, like, I stopped. Perhaps, Johnny, you can guess where I stopped playing. Because
was it the grappling hook?
Yeah. Before getting the grappling hook, because I listened today to the episode 142, the Super Metroid episode of RFN, and at some point, I will quote you, Johnny. You said something about, you know, like, you've played this game a lot, and you could not for the life of I could not for the life of me remember where the fucking grappling hook is. So after you get the power bombs, it's a little bit strange because up to that point, the game is kind of linear in a way. Like, if you know what you're doing, you don't do a whole lot of backtracking. It's not necessary. Like, you're constantly moving forward. You're constantly discovering a new path and new things.
Right. And there's usually only one or two possible ways you could try to go given the last ability that you got. So they don't. Nothing you get like cracks open the entire game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and once you get the power bombs, there's you, at that point you've seen tons of orange doors, and also you're kind of at the top of. I don't want to get this wrong. At the top of Brinstar, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're kind of close to a conduit that leaves an elevator that leaves you that gets you to Criteria, which is not at all where the grappling hook is. Like you're gonna, you need a grappling hook there, but it's all the other way around the world. You know, like it's not terribly long to make your way over there, unless you're like me and you don't exactly have like a photographic memory of what every corridor is. What would normally take for someone who actually really knows the game inside out, maybe like 10 minutes to get to the grappling hook, it takes me. At least half an hour, 45 minutes, because I do enter every possible dead end on the way.
You know there's a map if you pause.
I know. But you know, like I...
if you pause.
Looking at the map, yeah. Looking at the map, I can't always tell, okay, like this is, you know, the way to go. Like sometimes the those tunnels on the map are not completed, or maybe I failed to look at to download the map from one of those stations. And
yeah, sure. I mean, the maps in Super Metroid are not quite as detailed as they are in a lot of later games that were inspired by it. So yeah. It's not as easy to read routes in particular.
Yeah. So, I played through Super Metroid in about, like, 3 hours and 30 minutes, like 91% of the items. I don't think I'm going to go back and get everything. I just wanted to play through it, and this time I had a spectator. I had my girlfriend watching, and it was fun to see her, like, react and be shocked when the baby Metroid attacks Samus.
The baby.
And, you know, like, all that stuff at the end. Just finding Mother Brain disgusting, and then again being shocked when the baby comes back.
Babies cry.
And, yeah, tons of fun. I still love this game. I can't say I was playing with the Wii U controller Pro, and that thing is no replacement for an SNES pad.
Not mapped as well.
Back in the day, I would keep the default controls. I would, shoot with X and run with B and jump with A. And I would basically, you know, like you kind of put your thumb in a way where you can rest the joint of the thumb in the middle of all those buttons. And then you can basically just hold down B and do every other action, like, pretty easily. Anyway, like it's very clear in my head how I hold the controller, but on the Wii U controller Pro, you're just the buttons are too far inside the controller, and it just doesn't work as well. So I customize the controls, and I kind of gave up on the ability to aim diagonally down. And I really missed that ability in Meridia, where you've got tons of locations where you're over, you know, like you enter a room, you're going to be up high, and you've got to have these fake Metroids just coming at you. So, missed that.
Metroids.
Yeah. And then I realized, not only can you customize the controls through the game, but you can customize the controls for the virtual console itself. So I could have actually mapped, you know, something to the ZR or LR buttons, and still, you know, like kind of manage to keep my diagonal buttons intact. But I didn't think of that early enough. Anyway, so that was my fascinating account of playing through Super Metroid.
No, I thought it was great.
Yeah, and you know, like playing it with someone today, someone who hasn't played it back in the day, I was being a little bit self-conscious, but some things stuck out a little bit more than normally would, like stuff that I'm used to, like just how silly really like many of the sounds are, the monsters like Crocomire, like just I don't know, like I guess I'm used to them now, but he. Yeah, they sound really, really weird.
He sounds
out of
like
place.
An elephant, kind of.
Yeah, kind
sort of.
Sort of
trumpets.
Yeah, and for a game that's supposed to be like to have such a somber tone to it, it's really the enemies don't make sense, and some of them are really out of place. Like these enemies in Brinstar, like that are basically balls that bounce around, and they're just faces. How does that work? You know, how does that work? I posted on the Miiverse. I took a screenshot. I just posted my existence is a nightmare, and I don't know. I was a bit more critical, I guess, of the game this time than I've been in the past.
I've never even thought
anyway.
Of that.
It was fun.
That's funny. So Kim, why don't you go next for new business?
Okay. Well, I recently got Injustice: Gods Among Us. And I got it for the PS3, actually. And it came with the fantastically hilarious Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe.
Oh, God.
I just won't even touch that one. But Injustice is amazing. I actually haven't even finished the story mode yet because I've been so obsessed with multiplayer mode. Like, anyone that comes over, I just, like, hand them a controller. I'm like, we're playing now. I feel like when I first started playing it, you know, I didn't do the tutorial at first. I just was like, let's just jump right in. And I, you know, got my ass kicked a lot because the controls are crazy. But, you know...
Is it still, like, the same old controls of Mortal Kombat with, like, a low kick, high kick, low punch, high punch, and block? Or there's more to it?
Kind of, but it has a lot. Like, you really need to master the combos if you're going to get anywhere in the game.
I think they took out the block button, didn't they?
Superman doesn't block.
A way to block
for Injustice.
For Injustice, if you just move the opposite direction, they'll
block.
That's
all Mortal Kombat style.
It's more Street Fighter style, because Mortal Kombat always had a button.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like, you know, at first I was just like, oh yeah, I'll just smash buttons and we'll go for this, and no, you really have to think about what you're doing, which was frustrating at first, but I totally love it now. And then, you know, doing the tutorial helped, obviously. No, I just can't believe how extensive this game is and all the online things and has the challenges you're able to do, and I'm really excited for the download content. I haven't gotten any yet, but I really want to.
Yeah. So is, like, your entire set of friends, you guys all love fighting games?
Yeah, I would say that's kind of 90% of whenever we play a game together, it's a fighting game.
Wow.
Nice.
Very cool. I was going to say, if you had the Wii U version, you'd be waiting for that DLC for a long time.
I know, I saw that, and I was like, oh, thank God I have the PlayStation version, because it's all there now.
Yeah, which to me, it doesn't seem like, I mean, it's an irritation, but it doesn't seem like a huge deal, but, you know, if this was the only Wii U game I'd bought for the past 6 months... I might be pretty pissed about that, because I might want to keep playing it. I might want to play the best version of it, and you can't do that right now.
Yeah, no, it's totally unfair. And especially the downloadable content is, I mean, the characters they're introducing they're really cool. It's not just like just skins or anything. You know, you're really getting a lot of different gameplay styles with the characters.
And you can get Scorpion, can't you?
Yeah, which is weird.
We're now a DC superhero.
I know, like, do they just love Mortal Kombat? Like,
well, it's Ed Boon's baby.
Okay.
Yeah, they're made by the same people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of gathering that the moment, you know, I flipped over the disc and it was like, oh, Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. Yeah, I feel like there's a connection here.
Yeah, the connection is nobody bought that game.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I tried playing
that game.
There's no fatalities.
DC's not going to let you put fatalities in. I have torn Superman asunder.
I was really disappointed by that. I was like, oh, cool. Like, and then it was like, no, you finished him. And I was like, wait, I just beat him a bunch. That wasn't really finishing him. What?
Yeah, you now own two different Mortal Kombat games that don't have fatalities.
Effectively, yes.
But I love, I just keep calling them the final smashes of the characters, you know, in Injustice.
How do you build that up? Like, do you have to do as many combos as you can, and then you get the ability to unleash, like, some crazy attack, or what?
Yes and no. I mean, you get, whenever you're damaged, you get a little bit of boost in there, and then whenever you do damage, but basically, if you really want to just trigger it really fast, just let someone beat you up, because that's the fastest way to trigger it.
Okay.
So throw the fight is what you're telling us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No. Make your enemy put their guard down. They're like, oh, you suck, and then just pull it out there.
It's called a feint.
I like sandbagging.
My favorite one is that the environment changes. When you do a certain combo in really close to a wall in certain areas, you just like will slam them through the wall or something and go into a totally different like plane area.
Oh, that's like old 3D fighters,
mm-hmm.
like PlayStation well, era stuff.
Mortal Kombat did that too, usually with the floor and the ceiling.
One thing I like though is they're using it to do like a lot of DC cameos and stuff. Like you can see Scarecrow and like Penguin or glimpses of them when you smash them through a wall or something.
Like just chilling out, like just.
No, like they'll like in one of them Arkham Asylum, when you smash them through a wall, Scarecrow will jump out and then like stab them, and then they'll.
Yeah. It's a tough neighborhood.
And they'll have look. They'll kind of trip out. And then
he was holding on to that knife just in the off chance.
Just
that,
in the off chance
one of
that
his
Batman
mortal enemies
through
ever
wall.
Had to
no,
be
like,
thrown
like his
through a
scarecrow
wall.
Needles, you know, and inject them with the stuff. His yeah. little nightmare stuff. And then I'm so
I just like the idea that he's kind of waiting for
I like the
Batman
idea they let him keep those in the asylum. Like, no, you can have those. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I was like, is he just like is his ear against the wall? Like, oh man, they're getting close. Get ready.
Yeah. No, he uses his scarecrow vision to see through the wall.
I just like to imagine that he was just chilling out and something busted through the wall, and that was just like his Twitch response. Oh God!
Yeah.
Yeah, just taking a nap.
His fight or flight reaction is to inject.
Oh man, showtime. And they really use environments a lot. It's different in each area you go to. Some of them don't really have many kind of environment things you can trigger. Some of them have a lot. Sometimes you're just really surprised because if you look up near your health bar, it'll also tell you, like, press R1. And when you do so, you know, you use the environment. And a lot of times it's just smashing someone against, like, a statue. But some of them are really clever. Like, you can kick someone up into, like, an electricity thing hanging down, or there's grenades on the floor you can pick up and then throw when you want. Depending on where you are, and it's really fun just discovering, you know, because a lot of times whoever you're playing against doesn't realize you're next to one of those, and you can take them totally by surprise.
All right, so that's Injustice, a game that is out on Wii U, although
in a nerfed form.
Yeah, sort of. Mm. But one of the few notable releases.
One of the few releases,
spring.
Certainly.
Yeah, I think it might have been the only game come out in April.
Oh God.
Anyway. That's all about to change, as we'll talk about later in the show. So, Kim, you were also playing, I guess for review, the future James Game of the Year.
Yeah, I was reviewing Undead Bullying, which I have no idea why it's not getting more press. Oh, my gosh.
Which really? Is the question
it's
people
just a
ask
bad
after,
name for a golf
wait, that's
game.
A really a thing?
I mean, I took it because I was like, you know, I really should review something soon.
Yeah,
and
it's review guilt.
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed it, so it turned out okay.
Oh no.
Like in the way that you enjoyed Elf Bowling?
No one enjoyed Elf Bowling, even ironically.
I really wasn't expecting anything, which I feel helped immensely when
stop the bowling. No lower your expectations.
Lower your expectations and it will be phenomenal. Just the moment I started it and crazy like heavy metal music starts like blasting and the title just slams down Undead Bowling. I knew I was in for a treat. You know, it's surprisingly straightforward. It's you're bowling for the undead.
I'm shocked.
Headline of the year. Yeah, the zombies are not bowling. They are the bowling pins that you knock over.
Yeah, that was obvious.
Yeah.
It'd be too much to have them bowl. That'd be
They don't stay in formation. They're kind of mob-like, and you have this bowling ball of doom with like spikes and stuff that occasionally sets on fire. every single time you take a turn, they'll kind of slowly move forward, and you have a little cutscene, and more will just pop up in the floor by magic, and. There's three different types of play settings. Each of them have like a different type of zombie. There's the regular citizen guy. There's this fat one that's like all he is just really fat. And then there's
just like
this,
in life.
And there's this like rocker guy with long hair. And when you smash him, he like splits in two and like crawls really fast with his arms. And it's genuinely a little creepy when you're playing it in the middle of the night.
Wow. Okay, that sounds disturbing.
The world is not ready.
It's like this ghost story my college had that was like, you know, there's the little girl that can crawl faster than you can walk.
Throw a bowling ball at her.
Yeah. And then there's a mode where it just has all three of them going at you. And then there's three different modes to play in these different setting thingies. And, you know, one of them is just survive. You get 15 turns and you just try not to die. Very complex.
So it's regular bowling.
Yeah, it's bowling. And the next one is basically the same. You're just trying to hit a certain amount, like 150 of them or 200 of them, and basically just don't die, and you're fine. The really hard one was combo, where you have to hit a certain amount of them in one turn, and you have like 5 lives, and you lose a life every single time you don't hit the designated combo. And it has a really steep curve, because you'll like play the first one through, and you're like, okay, yeah, I got this. And then you play the next stages one, and you do the first, you know, two combos real easy. And then the third combo comes along, and you're like, I didn't even get half of that. What the hell? And then you proceed to watch as your life just keeps going down and down, and they get closer and closer, and you're like, why can I not hit you? You're not even dodging.
Well, the combo mode sounds kind of interesting. Yeah. Like, kind of an Angry Birds kind of thing, maybe? Or
Oh, well, one thing I did forget to mention is you do control the bowling ball after you throw it.
So this is Rock of Ages.
This is Rock of Ages, but without, like, Rococo art, basically.
It slowly curves, but if you press the A button for, like, a split second, it'll do, like, a sharp turn. So you really gotta, like, finesse and be, like, time it just right and press the buttons just right with the correct angle. Like, at first it doesn't really matter, but then once you start really getting into combo mode, you're like, oh, crap, I gotta, like, pay attention to this. I'm gonna get my brains eaten.
So I feel that way right now hearing about this game, to be fair, so.
So it's not just that you enjoy the aesthetic of this. Do you feel like it's actually an interesting kind of variant on bowling? Like, it's really fun to play?
Honestly, yeah. Like, I finished writing the review, and I've still picked it up a couple times, which is more than I can say about some other games I've played.
Wow.
It's so quick, you know, because you can just pick a mode and just go for it, and I cannot lie, it is so satisfying to just smash these guys. I mean, a little bit, like, gory. There's, like, blood that, like, splatters at you in 3D, because it's for the 3DS, and it's
so, of course.
It's satisfying. You know.
Is this rated M?
Probably.
I want this to be rated M so badly.
If this is rated M, I will buy it.
I want a rated M bowling.
If they made
game.
A zombie bowling game that is not allowed to be played by children, then I want this.
I mean, you know, you're smashing a guy in half. You have blood splattering at you. You know, crazy music to go along with it. You have a hilarious bonus round that sometimes triggers with this weird slot machine where everybody turns gold and you just knock them over like dominoes. It's so random. And all of this is juxtapositioned with smooth jazz music when you're in the lobby.
Oh, yes.
Like, is this set just a regular bowling alley? Because it pretty much needs to be.
It's basically a bowling alley. You know, this is obviously a post-apocalyptic world, so it's not as clean as you might like it. It's a little run down.
See, I think it being post-apocalyptic actually takes something away. If it was just a regular bowling alley with other people in other lanes playing, the
you never see any other
might
people
be really high.
You never see any other people. When you do actually defeat the zombies for your level, it's great because this giant thing of spikes comes down and pushes them all into a pit of lava, which apparently they store in a bowling alley.
As they are wont to do, yes.
Of course. And at one point, they sort of mention something that suggests I might be trapped there. Because they're like, you'll never leave. And it's like, I thought I came here for a nice game of bowling.
it just suggests you might be trapped.
It's possible.
So
that's got a little dark all of a sudden.
I know. They it's like they don't mention that until like near the end. They're like, you'll never leave, and it's like, wait, what? I didn't I thought this was just a nice game of bowling. Apparently I really am fighting for my life here.
Is this out yet?
It's yes, and it is rated M. I just looked it up.
Holy shit!
Wow,
this is Dead Rising bowling, basically.
So, if you have a couple dollars to spare and you want just a weird little game, I actually recommend it. Surprisingly,
James, how much would you pay? $10? $15?
I just wrote an article about stupid games, and this might be the dumbest game I've heard of in a month.
Sir, you too can enjoy Undead Bowling on the 3DS eShop for the low, unbelievable price of $6.99.
There's a lot of things that are unbelievable in general. The price, irrespective of that statement.
I feel like the best part for me is it was free.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that in the download space. But
yeah.
I'm having to put in my birth date as I purchase this bowling game.
He's doing it.
Gentlemen,
he's
we have crossed the bridge.
It.
It's all over from here.
I can't help myself.
When I actually tried to look up the rating first on Nintendo's site and asked me to put in my birth date, and when I pressed submit, it just like crashed the site. So apparently they really don't want me knowing about this game.
I kind of just want, like, I really wish this game was just, like, set at a birthday party. Like, this is just normal. People are in the bowling alley throwing balls at their undead ancestors. Just, like, whatever. It's fine.
That's what I kind of figured. Oh, and there's a boss battle, BT Dubs. It's epic. I didn't know there was a boss, but...
it's a bowling boss. I'm really close to paying for this right now.
Good lord.
I'll wait until after the show. Wow, Ken, thank you for bringing this important game to our attention.
Yeah.
So,
important is the word.
So, James, you mentioned you had a couple different paths to take. Which one are you pointing at now in this defining
very,
moment?
Very briefly, I will, just a quick aside, I am just finishing up Project Cross Zone, which is the dumbest game I had ever heard of until I've heard about this game.
Uh-huh.
And I actually have a article going into the next Powered Off issue about stupid games that I now feel has become woefully out of date as I sit here at this moment. But be that as it may, I will soldier on. So briefly, since I'm going to be talking about download space, I want to talk about the heartbreaking announcement that Capcom has decided to make Breath of Fire 6 MapleStory on your cell phone, which kills me inside, personally. I'm in extraordinary pain at the thought of it.
And you mentioned to us before recording that they've actually released a whole bunch of Breath of Fire games that just never were released outside
right.
Japan.
Right, but they're all clearly delineated as spinoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
They're never...
This one is like, oh, you've been waiting for 15 years for Breath of Fire 6. Here it is.
Here it
and
is.
It's not,
it's Maple
not even
Story.
Close to what you want.
Oh, it's so, like, I saw the announcement image and just sank. It was terrible. If you've never played Breath of Fire 2, for the love of God, go to the Virtual Console right now and go get it. It's amazing.
It's really good.
It's really, really good.
But speaking of like places, just to go back to Guillaume's comments about Super Metroid, like places where you always get stuck, I think I've gotten up to the exact same point in Breath of Fire 2 at least three different times of renting it and owning it on GBA. And I've never gotten past that point. And the sad thing is, it's like 25 hours in.
Oh, I've beaten that game like five times. It and Lufia 2 are up there for me.
It just gets to a point where there's too many places to go and all of them seem insanely hard.
Yeah, and the game as a whole is pretty grindy, isn't
there
it?
There are stretches where the game expects you to grind. There are stretches where the game lets you through with a relatively low barrier to entry.
Hmm.
It's not like you constantly have to grind. I think there's probably about
you probably owe the game about 2 grind sessions throughout its duration. And, yeah, and where you bad, where you put those is up to you, but you owe them to the game at some point.
It can be very tough.
It can be. But it's so good. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Breath of Fire 2 is awesome. And I like, the first one's okay, but it's kind of primitive. But it's not as easy to find
nowadays. It's kind of a weird parallel to Lufia and Lufia 2 in a lot of ways, including the fact that they have that weird, like directly linked to the predecessor game plot line.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you prefer your RPGs to be a little more on the simple side, then I can definitely recommend Breath of Fire 1.
Right.
But wasn't Breath of Fire 1... Wasn't the first one made by Squaresoft and published by Capcom?
Yes, like it was.
They farmed it out, and then the second one, they made it themselves?
They made it themselves, yeah. And I've always wondered, like, was part of the contract to make the first Breath of Fire that they were essentially paying Squaresoft to teach them how to make this kind of game? Because it was a very popular style of game back in the mid-90s on Super Nintendo. And like, this was, Capcom was like, hey, we don't have anyone here who can do this, and all these other companies are making a lot of money. Let's pick up the institutional knowledge. And,
right.
I just thought it was interesting that Capcom made only from the second one onward.
And I talked about this a bit on Twitter. Part of the lament here isn't just that a Breath of Fire 6 is coming out and it's going to be terrible. It's that this is sort of, you know, even though this franchise was effectively dead because the last game was a PS2 game. I think it was an early PS2 game as well. It's just that this whole style of game, there's so few people that make them now. It's somewhat...
well.
Upsetting to think about if this is a...
I wish you could play Ni No Kuni, because it is definitely, you know, along the same lines.
Yeah.
Have you, James, have you ever ended up playing those games that Johnny evangelizes, like the Breath of Death 7?
I've played a little bit of it.
Okay. Yeah, for whatever reason, I just
don't like playing those kinds of games on the PC. And that's what I've got them on. Mm. Like, mm-hmm. I like that to either be the handheld experience where I can just lay back in bed and just hold it over my head, or... like lounging on the couch and playing it on a big TV.
Yeah, I think you can get those on iOS. I don't know how good those versions are.
Oof. That's a bridge too far, Johnny. But speaking of bridge too fars into the download space, which Breath of Fire 6 is, you may be aware of a phenomenon that has swept the Japanese downloadable software charts for the last roughly year. And when new games come out into the download space in Japan, they'll celebrate them as number one after this game, which is Puzzle & Dragon, which is this ridiculously successful Japanese download game that, for life of me, from a distance, I could never figure out why it was so successful. So as sort of a... figured this out for myself and maybe write about it, I went and said, oh, there's a US release of this game, I'll download it and see what it's like and maybe write about the experience. Because this game is absurdly successful in Japan. It is basically sat on top of the phone game download chart since it came out. It's insane. You see people like Mark McD tweet about stuff and they're like, hey, it's number one behind Puzzle & Drag.
Did it just come out in English?
It came out like 2 months ago. It's relatively recent, and it's only available in the U.S. right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So the game itself is a relatively simple affair. It's a bit of Puzzle Quest mixed with Pokemon. And instantly you can start to figure out, oh, that's why this game is popular in Japan.
Yeah.
But essentially what it is you go into these dungeons, and you just sort of walk through them, and you encounter a set number of enemies... and it's random what comes up in each grouping, and then you slide the puzzle pieces around to do elemental attacks, and assuming you have a creature of that element in your party, it attacks. And it does damage based on the statistics, and based on combos, and based on the number of things, gems you lined up. It's not really that complicated of a game, as you collect these monsters, which you randomly get from killing them, and you can also get them from these lottery events. You can then either swap them into your party, or you can merge them sort of Jade Cocoon style into the monsters that are already there. And that's the only mechanism you have for leveling up. They don't gain experience from battle. They gain experience from being merged with other monsters. Eventually, you can do special combinations to evolve them into other creatures and gain power, etc., etc., etc. It's not that complicated of a game. The little tweak they have in there is, you know, it's supposed to just being able to slide the gemstone around one space to make a combo. you actually get a defined amount of time from when you tap it to when you release, that you can move it around as much as you want, and you can rearrange the board that way to sort of trigger out these big combos. So it does give you time to sort of, you can sort of plan ahead and release really, really big waves of attacks. So there's, it's a little bit more complicated than your average gem shuffling game, but it's not really that much different. And basically,
so, like, are you playing this on a phone?
I am playing this on a phone. This is only available on phone platforms. So
yeah, no, or tablets.
Yeah,
but I mean, isn't your finger too big, or like?
No, it's,
you know, too.
No, I mean, it's okay. Half the screen is devoted to just the gem space. So there's plenty of space to. They're pretty big. I mean, occasionally I'll miss tap, but it's not the end of the world. So, really, though, what I'm trying to understand as I play this game is why it's so popular. I get that the Pokemon element is part of it, but it doesn't really seem to sort of drive the, you know, it's not enough to push the needle. I mean, there's plenty of Pokemon clones out there that don't get this level of success. And it is a competent puzzle game, and the battle mechanics, you know, they're puzzle quests. They work out okay. To me, what's really interesting here, and it sort of gets to the psychology of making these phone games, is how it rewards continually opening the game up. So every day you log in consecutively, you get a reward up to 7 days. And then after the seventh day, it just keeps giving you this really nice reward. It's a bunch of in-game currency, which you have to collect to merge your monsters. It's a token for using for doing the lottery. And sometimes you even get a gemstone for doing the special lottery, which is the one where you get the really ridiculous monsters. So the game is rewarding you for logging in every day, but how it also rewards you for logging in multiple times a day is that each time you play the game, you have a stamina meter. And as you play it, each time you go into a dungeon, your stamina meter drops by a certain number of points. It tells you before you go in how much it's going to drop by. And you could pick. And sometimes dungeons will have modifiers on them, so it's half stamina loss, or it's double EXP, or double money, stuff like that. So the game is constantly forcing you to go in simply because after your stamina runs out, you can't do anything.
And every time you go back into the game to check it again, it's another opportunity for them to sell you stamina.
Exactly. So the stamina can be exchanged for using these gemstones. You get one of a day after a certain point. But you can buy these gemstones in packs of five in the cash shop. But they aren't cheap.
Of course you can.
They're really expensive. But
like how expensive?
They're like, I think it was five for $5. I mean, they're...
Oh,
let me pull it up. That may be inaccurate. I don't want to make it sound like too gougy.
So that's like a dollar a play if you go beyond the... The free frequency.
So yeah, what happens is you get a certain amount of your stamina back every 7 minutes. So if you play it and then walk away for a couple hours and come back, most of your stamina should be back. But if you don't want to do that, well, you know, there's options. So let's see. The Magic Stone Shop. Okay, I'm sorry. One Magic Stone is 99 cents. 6 Magic Stones is $5.
So you get a deal.
It sort of scales. If you want to buy 85 Magic Stones, it's only $60.
Oh, what a savings.
But see, what also those are good for is you can then take them into the really, 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 really good lottery and get the best monsters. And why the game incentivizes you again to log in constantly is that before you go into a dungeon, you're presented with a list of monsters that other players have been training, essentially. And they are added to your party for the duration of that encounter. So, you know, if your party doesn't have an electric type in it, you could grab one from that list so all the electric gemstones aren't just in the way. They actually are useful. Or you can use it to pad out weaknesses in your party. It's kind of an advantage. You can sort of shop for a temporary ally. And in doing so, they get 5 points to use in the lottery from you. And you get 5 points from using them. And if you add them as a friend, you get each of you get 10. The thing is, you can only use someone every time they log in. Therefore, you can only be used by people every time you log in. So you keep logging in order for people to be able to continue to use you. So your friends keep using you, and you get more in-game lotto currency.
Pretty soon, your life is Puzzle and Dragons.
Basically, it is. So you open it up. And that's enough. You've reset the counter, and people can start using you again. There's sort of a weird in-game psychology where you want to go into the really rare lottery because the cooler looking your monster is, the more likely it is you're going to be selected. There is some serious social engineering going on in this really simplistic game. And it's kind of impressive. I'm actually legitimately impressed by the sheer amount of just fuck with the consumer they managed in one game. I can understand why it's successful now, and I can understand why people in Japan tell their friends, hey, get this. So they have someone to swap with. It's
evil.
It's evil and clever, but you know what? It's actually surprisingly decent, even if you don't use the cash shop.
Yeah.
It's not a bad game without it, but with
It sounds pretty intriguing to me just in terms of the mechanics, but it's just my old school nature. I keep thinking, how much can I pay just to never have to deal with that shit and just let me play as much as I want? But of course, the real secret is they don't give you that option, because for those people who really just want to play it an unlimited amount, they are happy to take an unlimited amount of your money.
Exactly.
And that's why these free games can end up costing people thousands of dollars. And the reality, if you're like in the 1% of the 1% who are going to go that crazy for it, there's almost no limit to what you might spend.
Well, and the reality of the situation is that the game's not engaging enough that you'd want to play it for long stretches of time. I mean, it's fun, but I mean, it's a lot of the same. So you have to collect coins, regular coins, not the special friend coins. Mm-hmm. Collect coins and collect captured monsters to upgrade the monsters you already have within the confines of your stamina, and level up your own personal skills so you can have more stamina and can carry more monsters and can go into deeper dungeons. It's sort of this, I mean, it's a relatively simple mechanic in that respect. All the other stuff is just built on top of it. It's extraneous measures to get you engrossed into the game, to reward you for playing or to reward you for paying. It's a constant, you know, churn of the game.
Feedback loop.
Right. So if you buy stuff, like I got really lucky and managed to collect 5 of these gems without having to buy one. And I went to the special lotto while they were having a special event today where it was like God Monsters Only lotto. So like, right, if you were in the special lottery today and you had enough to play it, you got a God Monster. And sure enough, I got the loneliest God Monster in my inventory now.
The loneliest.
Yes. He's dark and brooding.
You saved him.
He's dark and... Well, the funny thing is, I'm not a high enough level to even use him. So he's just going to sit in my box forever. But that's fine. He's the loneliest God Monster.
But they've just given you a long-term goal to keep you going.
Exactly. It's so insidious.
Make it stop. I can't even...
If you didn't have enough gemstones today and you saw, oh shit, it's God Monsters Only Day... And you're really into this game? I could see somebody going, all right, 99 cents. I just need one gem. I'll just go buy it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so evil. It's so evil.
I'm loving the amount of planning that went into this game.
Like, it's genius. I don't even understand. I mean, the amount of just foresight in the design mechanics here is really brilliant.
Yeah, James, you respect this mostly as an economic exercise.
I expect and as a psychological exercise. Like,
yeah,
I get that too. The psychology behind it is so well meticulously crafted. It's really impressive.
Okay, well, I never thought we'd talk about Puzzle and Dragons on this show, but I'm glad you brought it up. Thankfully, we don't have to deal with that crap on Wii U and 3DS very much.
Or any crap.
Or any games on Wii U, at least. But that's about to change, and we're going to be talking about it right on the other side of this break. So stick around.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we have a review for Attack of the Friday Monsters on 3DS by James Dawson. When I think of the Friday Monsters, I think of a 4:30 project meetings and happy hour hangovers. Apparently Japan's periscavidicatriophobia is actual giant monsters. And this is charming? Apparently. Read the review. And we also have a feature called Nintendo Collector's Journal by Justin Berube. It's possible Justin is a doppelganger built entirely of sentient Nintendo merchandise. He has enough to constitute a human body. This week he's got an assortment of stuff, special mention to all the Happy Meals one must consume to get those McD toys.
Wow.
It's just a walking pile of Nintendo merchandise. It's fine.
Kim, you can start whenever you're ready.
We also have a feature, our NES memories. 30 years of Famicom staff and guests. It's the 30th anniversary of the Famicom's release, so what better way to celebrate it than celebrate the NES? It's close enough, we're not Japanese. Various NWR staff and game developers give their take on five NES games they love. That's not really what's important. Becky Holliday wrote about Paperboy, so for her good taste, she is now site overlord. Congrats, Becky. Okay, Becky.
Paperboy?
She's in charge now, Johnny. Don't question it.
Yay, Becky. Okay.
She's the boss.
I'll be sure to tell her that. Another feature we have is the history of Alpha Dream. Ketchup and Plumbers. You probably know them best for card monster battle game, Code of Battle. I'm not good at these pronunciations. Guardian of the Heavens. They also did some dumb Mario and Luigi RPG stuff, but we all know where it's at.
That's Justin Baker, by the way. I forgot to include that in my moronic scripts.
James, it's really hard to pull off the sarcasm when you make us stumble over these words.
It's Kodo Battle, Tengai no Moribito. Oh.
Sure.
We have a review, Pikmin 3 on a Wii U by Andy Gergen. A full 40 years after it was first announced, Pikmin 3 is finally available. Are Pikmin insects or plants? Are they something else altogether? Andy doesn't care. He loves Pikmin 3. Biologists will probably not enjoy the experience so much.
I feel like Miyamoto's gonna, like, destroy the granite tablets upon which Pikmin 3 is coded once he sees that the audience doesn't think it's the greatest thing of all time.
Last this week, we have a blog, A Tale of Ducks and Pubs by Andrew Brown. In Australia, apparently, there are things called family bistros where young Aussies of the 80s and 90s could test out NES consoles that Australian prices rendered utterly unaffordable. For Andrew, this is how he learns about DuckTales and Ninja Turtles. Well, if, you know, if you exclude their expansive media empires. Get a little slice of life from the land down under.
That sounds fascinating. Alright, so please go check out all of this great original content over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back, everyone. It's time for the second segment where we're going to talk about the fall lineup for Wii U in 2013. I put together a pretty extensive list of games here, and I thought maybe we'd take, like, maybe go through two rounds of picking out games that we want to talk about. You can pass if someone steals yours, but this is pretty much every notable game, I think, coming out on the system. It's about, what'd you say, 12 or 15? That are worth mentioning here, which is a decent number, you know, for 5 months out of the year. It's not great for the system having been out a whole year, but there's plenty of stuff worth talking about here. So let's see. As our guest, Kim, why don't you take first pick here? Which one of these really excites you?
Watch Dogs, really. I loved it.
Okay.
I played it. I mean, I didn't totally play it at E3, but they had a whole meeting appointment thingy where they played through it for me. I was totally floored by all the stuff you can do in it.
Did you see the Wii U version?
No. They actually technically wasn't any system version. It was off of a computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The best version.
Yeah, probably the probably
platform agnostic
be the best.
Target render version.
I mean, because I hadn't really done any research into the game previously. And it wasn't even one I was thinking about when I was going to the booth. And then I saw all the stuff that could happen. It was like, wow, I want this game so bad. It's just great how extensive it goes into things, how all the people you interact with in it, like, you know, you could show up on the news and then you walk into a store and people will recognize you. And, you know, based on your relationship with that person, they could call the police, they could try to, you know, keep you on the down low. Like, I just love that, you know, you really have to think about everything. You know, you can't just run around shooting people in the street because there's consequences. People are going to scream. Mm-hmm. Police are going to be called.
You can't get your star rating up and then run into a pay and spray.
Yeah. And then I love that they know that there's different types of gamers and you can really, you know, you can choose to be all stealthy about your missions and really plan out things, you know, or you just barge right in depending on where you are. You know, it really depends on what type of game you want to play. And I am a sucker for multiplayer options, and I love that you can just sneak into your friends' games, and it doesn't ask them, there's no kind of thing, you just kind of seamlessly go in, and then mess with their
game. It's the anti-Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Yeah, no invitations. But yeah, you just, and then you proceed to just mess with whatever they're doing, and see how long you can get away with it until they figure out you're there and kick you out. Like, I love that. I'm so excited for the possibilities.
That is really awesome. All right, well, that's a good choice. Wasn't the first one I was expecting to hear, but it's a game that I still don't know a whole lot about, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'd like to feel that the Wii U version would have some considerable merit because of the controller. Certainly they are doing a lot of those same features on other systems just by tying a tablet or a phone into the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that everybody can play it that way on Wii U, and that you don't have to, you know, own something else, you don't have to tie up the iPad if you want to play while someone else is using it, there's a lot of potential benefits to that, and also the fact that it's right there on your controller.
Yeah, exactly. I would not want to play this with my phone on my lap and have the screen just go black every, after a minute, and it doesn't sound like a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, it really felt like, for once, you know, people were thinking about the Wii U first, in a way, and then how to make the other systems adapt to meet those features.
Definitely, although I do feel like on a technical level, the Wii U version is not really going to compare to some of the other versions, including the one you saw.
Mm-hmm. No. Target render version is best version, obviously.
That's too bad. I wish you could do both. But it's certainly an interesting game.
Don't get us started on that conversation, Johnny, please.
So why don't we move over to James?
Oh, okay. So for me, I'm going to have to say that it's hard, so I'm going to have to go ahead and say for me that it's Wind Waker HD.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, well,
okay.
I mean...
Have you seen that the placeholder price now has gone from $50 to $60?
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm not thrilled about that, but it's a placeholder price, so I'll reserve judgment until Nintendo officially prices the game.
Doesn't bode well.
It is. Well, no, of course it doesn't.
Maybe they're paying Amazon to do market research for them.
Yeah, maybe. Ooh. But to me, I look at the games that are coming out, and there's a lot of been there, done that stuff in here. I mean, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, whatever. Super Mario 3D World, yeah, I just did that.
So among the been there, done that, Wind Waker
HD
is the one that
I've been there
appealing.
And done that least recently. But it's the one that I loved the most when I did it.
Okay.
Yeah, fair. Yeah.
I mean, to me, that game is really in its own special place. And, you know, I pull it out and play it periodically. But being able to actually play it on my HD set with HD graphics and just completely veg out, because I know every little intricate puzzle-solving solution to that game that... It's just going to be this kind of relaxing place I go after work. It's not really going to be a challenge or a unique experience. It's just going to be like my escapism.
Now, are you just happy to pay Nintendo, that much money to...
I'm not happy about it, but I'll do it.
For a chance... No, well, but just as an excuse to make you play through it again? Or are you really excited about the version, all the new features and, you know, upgrades that they've done to it? Because I don't find really anything they've announced or shown so far to be really all that compelling, including the graphical makeover. I just, at E3, it just didn't, to me, it did not look as good as I was expecting or hoping.
No, when I saw it playable, I was kind of put back a little bit by it. But, you know, I own this game. It's literally right behind my sofa at all times, because it's on the shelf of games I have. And if I wanted to, I could turn around, take it off the shelf, go to the Wii and put it in there. But I've done that not that long ago. And it was the first time I played it on something besides a CRT. And I was kind of a little put off by it.
Hmm.
It just didn't look right. And, you know, I'm not excited about paying Nintendo that kind of money for a game I've already played. But at the same time, I want
to... You're part of the problem.
I want to go back to that game. Well, no, yeah, because I'm not paying them for games where you turn into a wolf and collect star beads. I'm actually part of the solution.
You never bought a copy of Twilight Princess.
I did, but we talked about games you regret buying.
Oh. Yeah. Well, I like both of them just fine. Neither would be my favorite Zelda game by any means, but I have always liked Wind Waker from the first time I played it, and I still like it. I just cannot get excited about a remake. I think it's too soon, and what they've shown is...
It's been over a decade, though. I mean,
I'm not going to put down the quality of the work that they're doing. I just don't think it's imaginative enough. I feel like there's a lot more interesting things you could do with Wind Waker than just kind of run it through a filter. I'm disappointed in the ambition.
At the same time, though, I think there's a certain amount of, I want something long to play on Wii U.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same situation we had with the Ocarina of Time remake on 3DS. People bought it because it was something long to play on that system.
But you've got, you know, a couple of Assassin's Creed games by the time this comes out. You've got...
but those games have never really done it for me,
personally. You've got a couple of Batman games. I mean, these are all, like, over 20
hours.
Yeah, I mean,
I've always thought the Assassin's Creed games just were never my cup of tea.
Oh, okay. You probably won't like Watch Dogs either, then, but...
Maybe not, but my biggest issue with Assassin's Creed we've talked about in the past, and Watch Dogs intrinsically cannot have it, so that's fine.
All right. Well, I'm going to tee up Guillaume here by leaving him the really obvious one, and I think I'll talk briefly about DuckTales Remastered, because I did get to play this like at the very end of E3, and never really got to talk about it on the show, as I recall. And I'd heard very mixed things about it, about the demo from PAX East and also at E3. And when I finally got to play it, I was really back in that magical place as, you know, being 7 years old. And this was the first game I ever beat and played through it many, many times, absolutely adored it. And it just launched me back in there. And it looks... certainly doesn't look like a modern game, really. It's like this weird combination of 2D artwork and like polygonal environments. It has this kind of strange retro style to it, but it feels right. And that's what I was surprised about. I was afraid that they would kind of screw up the physics or the controls or something, and I wouldn't lock back into those instincts of pogoing around as Scrooge McDuck. And they did. And just almost right off the bat, I felt at home. I played through a large portion of the Amazon level. I think I tried out Transylvania as well. And I was just sucked back in so fast. And, you know, I think it looks pretty good too. But for me, again, I'm happy to pay them to make it convenient for me to just have an excuse to play this game again. And for me to have easy access to it.
And they added so much to it. There are areas that are completely new. And the bosses are so much... have such... more complicated patterns than they've had in the past.
I didn't see any of that, so it's all going to be gravy to me.
Yeah, I played the demo extensively at E3, and I played first the PlayStation 3 version, and I wasn't really feeling it. Like, the controls seemed to crap out on me a couple of times. I don't know if it's because their PlayStation controller had gotten a lot of use, or if I don't know, maybe it's just all in my head, but I don't like using analog buttons for this kind of, like, really precise platforming.
I had the same problem at E3 with the PlayStation 3 controller for that game.
Right. So, yeah, like, there's... I don't know, like, the pogo stick seemed to fail on me while I was in midair, like, over, you know, like... thorny vines or and stuff like that, and...
Wii U version for the win.
Yeah, it didn't happen to me when I played the Wii U version, so that's the version I'm getting, even though there's a rebate, I think, right now if you buy it on PlayStation 3.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth it. Yeah, because it's part of the Play series they're doing, the marketing series.
Right.
But I went into that game pretty skeptical and walked away from it just wishing I could take it home with me right then and there and play through the entire thing and, you know, sit in my pajamas and eat cereal and relive my childhood. And I'm very, very excited to play more DuckTales. And I'm just excited I can even say that. So, Guillaume.
Well, of all the games this fall, the one that I'm going to make sure that I don't miss out on is The Wonderful 101.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, not what I was expecting.
Something you might not know about me, I really, really love the crap out of Beautiful Joe. Uh-huh. And while I played the demo of Wonderful 101 at E3, I wasn't really feeling it all that much. Like, I sucked at the game, so... you know, I couldn't really figure out, oh, okay, like, how do I time my block? How come I can't block continuously just, you know, as much as I want? My attacks, I couldn't really figure out always, like, the right attack against the enemies. But the thing is, Beautiful Joe, I think I didn't fall in love with it until I beat it once. And I played the game again on hard difficulty. And that's where the whole combat system clicked. And I realized just how important it is to make the enemies, you know, to stun them. And how important it is to throw enemies into each other and rack up these huge combos. And I think it's very possible that the Wonderful 101 is going to have the same kind of depth here. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to sinking my teeth into that, and it really helps also that the style is so reminiscent of Beautiful Joe, you know, like the whole Henshin a Go-Go thing.
Totally.
Yeah, and the sense of humor. I've like all the trailers have been so freaking charming. I just can't wait for this game. And, you know, like, hopefully it's going to be, like, the true spiritual successor to Beautiful Joe that its sequel and its numerous spin-offs should have been.
Right. All right, good call, man. So let's go back around for the second and final round with Kim.
Rayman Legends, I hadn't played it, like, at all before that because I didn't have a Wii U at the time, and... So my first time playing it was at E3, and it was really fun. I mean, like I said, I'm a sucker for multiplayer games, and that has great incorporation of it. It was just high energy, like, bright graphics, just candy. I don't know. It was fun.
Yeah, that's one of those games, even though it is a sequel and it is similar to Rayman Origins, I've very rarely seen a game that got such a strong reaction from E3. A game that, although clearly not finished, I mean, it's still not out even more than a year later after they first showed it at E3 2012. It just felt immediately like everybody was totally crazy about it. And it felt so fun and innovative right off the bat, even from that E3 demo. And you rarely walk away from a demo feeling that not only do you see the potential, but that you just really experienced the potential and that you didn't really even have to project it. It's all right there in the demo. It's that good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a fun game.
It's just fun. Stop looking for me to say stuff.
Like I just walk away like, wow, I just had a lot of fun right now. That was it.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think, such a wonderful two-player game also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the gamepad, I do think that the Wii U version is the version to play because seen some videos. Maybe they're going to improve it, but they have some sort of weird workaround for the tablet usage on the other versions, the PlayStation 3 and Xbox versions. And it looks so janky. Mm. Like, you hold a button down and you try to aim Murphy in some general direction, but he seems to get confused very easily. That's probably going to get ironed up, but you could see him like just circle around this area that the player wanted him to go, and just wouldn't happen. And that really makes me happy that I get to control him directly on the Wii U. And
Guillaume is basking in the Schadenfreude.
No, but I mean,
send me all of your hate.
I'm just picturing like Murphy.
He's just reflecting it back onto the world from the past year.
Murphy could just be like, please, get away, you control me right.
Well, you know, like I'm sure it's still going to be fun in the other platforms. I'm just happy that
his statements.
What? No, but I mean, like I'm just happy that they didn't get the Wii U version because they're going multi-platform.
Well, they did. They gimped it by 8 months.
It's still going to be the best version.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard quite a bit of scuttlebutt, you know, from early reviewers, and it sounds like it'll definitely be the best version. So,
cool.
I'm looking forward to it as well. I think, you know, a 2D platform, especially since I just got Cloudberry Kingdom today. I don't know the 2D platformer is the genre that I need the most on my Wii U. I
mean, well, it's the genre you have the most on your Wii U.
It's definitely the one I have the most, but I don't want to penalize it for that because I'm definitely more excited for Rayman than I am Donkey Kong. Just from what I've seen, it does a lot more interesting things that its predecessor didn't. And
but there's an unannounced Kong, Johnny. There's an unannounced Kong.
Anyway, God, so James, I think you were up next.
Well, we know it's not going to be Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, because I just spent the last 2 minutes making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it, why'd you pick Wonderful 101? So I guess, can I pick Wind Waker again? Really, I guess I'm left with Super Mario 3D World.
All right.
I mean, it's a game that I'm marginally excited for, because I did enjoy 3D Land, but at the same time, it's not a great game. I mean, it's a good game. And it was the barrier between good and great doesn't seem that big, but intrinsically built into the game's DNA, I felt like it didn't have the capacity to be great. Even if they had polished that game as much as possible, it really couldn't pass into that pantheon of just games that are eternal in the esteem they will be held in. Galaxy.
Yeah, it didn't even make your top five that year, did it?
It didn't.
That's amazing to
me. And I really liked that game, but...
Well, but not compared to most people, myself included. Yeah. I think most people who played that game would say it is a great game.
See, because to me, I hold it up against the standard of other Mario games. And I think Galaxy and Galaxy 2 especially, Galaxy 2 is maybe goes beyond a great game. It is a resounding achievement of game design. And I really think Super Mario 3D World is such a step back. It's so regressive. I mean, I understand what they're going for. I understand why it's what it is. And I respect the decisions they made. And for what they made, it's really good. But you can't go to that precipice of perfection and then go so far back and not feel like you're being just yanked backwards. So I really am looking forward to Super Mario 3D World.
really?
Well, I mean, it probably will expand those. I think it will expand those boundaries a little bit. I mean, the multiplayer alone is a pretty humongous difference. And
it is and it isn't, though, because, I mean, I've had the multiplayer Mario experience a lot recently.
Yeah, but this did feel different than the new series to me, because it is 3D. You've never played a multiplayer 3D Mario, except maybe the competitive thing in 64DS, which wasn't that great. So the idea of you cooperating through these 3D, and I know they're not 3D like, you know, like a Galaxy level would be.
Right. They're not expansive 3D. They're just, you can move in three dimensions.
But I did feel like we got in each other's way a lot less than in the 2D games. And that made it a little more fun, and I wasn't dreading any of them even coming close to me like I am a lot of times in the 2D games. And then there's also stuff like where that level in the demo where you're all riding on the dinosaur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From, I guess that's probably the same one from 64. But you're riding her around, and you're steering her, and everybody cooperates on the steering. Like, I don't feel like I've ever done that, anything like that, in a Mario game.
Yeah, but, I mean, for me, I'm probably going to play this game mostly by myself.
Well, that too, and I'm...
Yeah, but actually, I think that's going to be the best experience that you can have.
Yeah, I know, but I want a game that is laser-focused to the single player. I mean,
sure.
That's how I play games. It's not that I hate people, although you may get that impression sometimes.
No comment.
It's that I come home from work, and I play games. I don't, you know, call, hey guys, come over, we're going to fucking Mario. that conversation doesn't happen. The conversation is, guys, I'm going to turn my phone off. I'm going to fucking Mario. And then, like, that's what I want to do.
Put on the music.
For me,
I think you're going to be able to do that, though.
Yeah,
this might be shocking to some people, but I did not really enjoy 3D World that much. Like, I didn't really have a great demo, and I think it's because I was mostly stuck playing with other people.
Oh, yeah. When I played the demo with three other people, they were morons. So, yeah, my experience with the game wasn't great, but I'm excited to play the game because I know what these guys can make. Mm-hmm. I'm not excited to play this game because of 3D Land.
Okay.
I know what EAD Tokyo is capable of. I've seen it, and I mean, I've written about it, I've talked about it. Galaxy 2 is unbelievable. And you know, the jump from Galaxy 1 to Galaxy 2 in terms of quality is really unbelievable. And now people say, oh, both those games are great. There's no comparison. If you go back and play those two games, you will see immediately that one of them is tremendously better than the other.
I'd forgotten just how much you love Galaxy 2, because I think when I associate with you with that particular game, mainly what I remember is you having to beat it in the span of like 3 days.
I beat it in two days for the review, because Nintendo dragged their ass on sending us the review copy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awful.
So and, your actual review and your actual opinion of the game had really faded from me, because that was so funny.
Yeah, because I was, I played the game the first day for 20 hours straight, basically. Yeah.
Oh my god!
I had to get into the game. I had like a day to write the review. Like, I mean, but what you didn't get, because you weren't, you know, this was a very close conversation, was me texting with John, going, because John had been reviews editor prior to being site director. He was site director at the time, or he had just stepped down. I can't remember. I think he was still site director. It was me texting with John, going like, John, what defines a 10? Because. Yeah, yeah. Because I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
And to me, and not speak for the rest of the site because it doesn't apply, for me, like, a 10 has to be something really out there, like, really far and away better than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I was basically like, John, talk me off this ledge. just talk me off it, because we're looking at a 10.
And he did, didn't he?
He did. I think I talked myself off it. I think I said, there are things about this game I don't like.
You ended up with like a 9.5.
It was a 9.5. I think I said, like, I hate the stupid litter cleanup game. I hate it.
Yeah, those are horrible.
It's awful. And I think, like, if that wasn't there, I may not have been able to talk myself off the ledge.
Hey, that thing was the reason I stopped playing it for, like, a year.
Yeah, so, like, I know what EAD Tokyo can make. I know if they're given as much resources as they want, what they can do. And I've seen, like, I saw what they could do on the Wii. Galaxy looks gorgeous. On the Wii, on essentially a souped-up GameCube.
Yeah. Like, and 3D World is not...
No,
it just was... the kind of game that it is not really set up to be that
not.
Kind of showcase
and
that Galaxy
And it's upsetting.
Was.
And I just think to myself, I'm excited for this game only because of the people making it, not because of what it is. And
it does feel like an exercise in design, whereas Galaxy was such an aesthetic showpiece.
It was, you know, it was like, let's just show off what we can do.
Not just in pretty graphics, but the camera angles and the little, like, one-second cutscenes it would do as you pass from one planetoid to the next are so enrapturing and so charming, and you've just never seen anything that exciting in a Mario game visually, and it definitely feels like 3D World is not really primed.
It's been totally stripped bare of that stuff. And
from what we've seen, there definitely is I think there's a lot presentationally that might still surprise
us. 3D Land was stripped bare of that stuff. And
absolutely, but as a portable game, you might expect it to be a little more bare bones
in
that way.
I mean, we've seen what the 3DS can do relative to what the Wii can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that bad of a comparison, to be honest. And the 3D Land was built to fill a need. Get a freaking game out on 3DS.
I think it looks fantastic. I mean, it's just they didn't want to design a game that was
just,
that expansive.
Just as a game conceit, that game was built to get to be out, essentially.
Yeah.
And I'm worried that despite having so much time to make a Wii U game, and I know it's relatively speaking, but the Wii U's been out for a while now, that this game won't be anything more than that.
Don't you think, though, this game got pushed up? So I feel like 2 years is not as much time as they would like to work on a Mario game, and I do feel like they probably had nominally expected this to be a 2014 game, and then once things started getting desperate and their shareholders started throwing tomatoes at Iwata, he said, okay, we got to do something desperate. Let's throw an extra 50 people on it and make sure this gets out by the holidays in every region.
Right. I mean, to me, this game could be great. It could be. But
I think there is a shadow in the back of my mind for that same reason, James. I do fear that it might be rushed.
I think every game EAD Tokyo announces, I'm going to be looking forward to, but I'm also going to be slightly haunted by phantoms.
By the specter of what could be and what they have done.
Right,
and
I know whatever they make is going to be good, because I don't think they would release something that isn't.
Mm-hmm. And this is a downer of a segment.
I know, but
that's one of the games he's most looking forward to.
Well, I mean, just out of this list, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. Well, let me help you move on from it.
Please, God, save me.
Okay, so going into the fourth quarter of this fourth quarter Wii U roundup, I'm going to pick out of the list Batman Arkham Origins. I'm a big fan of the Batman Arkham series, for sure. I do feel they might be stretching it a bit, although doing...
There's been a lot of Arkhaming going on.
Yeah, but doing a quasi-prequel where you kind of learn about the origins of Arkham Asylum and the early days of Batman...
Yeah, we're finally going to learn about that, huh? How you got started?
it's more about his early career.
I wonder what made him get into crime fighting.
No. But more just as a kind of a youthful guy. It's actually been a popular topic in the comics, but I just think it's a good setting. It makes more sense than them building a city for prisoners like in the second game, which is really dumb.
Yeah, it's the stupidest idea ever, to be honest. Let's be honest.
It's super stupid. So this one, it doesn't really take place in Arkham Asylum. It just takes place in Gotham. So this one, you're finally going to get to roam around Gotham City, and so it's going to look more like normal Gotham. And it all takes place on Christmas Eve, the entire game. So it's all covered in snow, and there's a lot of weather and wind, and it's such an awesome setting, and it's much more appealing to me than even Arkham City was. And then I saw that stuff at E3 that was just one of the coolest gameplay demo features I've ever seen at E3, where Batman has these certain number of scenes where you go into them and you create a virtual reality recreation of the crime scene by collecting clues. And it almost felt like, I don't know, like an Ace Attorney kind of thing, or even Ghost Trick, you know, where you're trying to recreate these memories by picking up different pieces of them, and then the computer will scan them in, and then you'll get this sort of, it's like a 3D movie. It's almost like a replay in Smash Brothers, where you can move the camera around as it goes. And as you get more clues, that thing will get longer and longer until you can finally, like, back it up to the point where you find out who shot that gun. And it's all fully controllable by the player, and it's just so awesome. And it's definitely not in either of the previous Batman games. And I just thought, I was asking about it, and they said, yeah, there's a whole bunch of those. They're almost all optional. They're just side quests. And every time you do one, it will basically put you on the trail of another supervillain who, you know, exists in the game as an optional quest to go track down. So it really pays off in terms of story and in terms of further gameplay as well. And I just thought, man, I want that in me. So Batman Arkham Origins. Batman Arkham Origins, you know, even if you feel like you might be getting burned out on a little bit, I'd say look into it, because it really surprised me at just how fresh it looked and at how much I just immediately wanted to play it. And the Wii U version is probably going to suck, but it is certainly available elsewhere.
Yeah, I just recently replayed Arkham Asylum, and it just got me so excited for this game, because... You know, I was first really excited when they first made the announcements and all the stuff that was coming out, and we kind of didn't hear anything for a while, and then I just started playing the games again, and I was like, I miss this so much. This is going to be great.
Yeah, I've only ever played Asylum, and I liked it. It was a rental, though, and, you know, like, I haven't gone back to it, and I haven't played the CD yet. You know, like, there's a lot of people really, well, and justly, who are really pissed off about the fact that the Wii U version is going to be missing the multiplayer component. It would hurt less if the game were cheaper, but I really doubt it. Mm-hmm. Like, personally, I don't really mind. I'm never, ever, ever going to play the multiplayer for that game, but it's just almost a matter of principle, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and the multiplayer is a brand new mode. It wasn't in the previous two games, and it may end up being something really crass that nobody would want to play anyway. So it's hard to say right now whether we should be pissed off about it, but it certainly sets a bad image for the game among Wii U owners.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe there's something cool that they're going to add to the game. No.
To make up for it.
That it would
in
be
place
nice
of that.
Them. Yeah.
They're just going to say, it, you know, well, it's enhanced because it has all this gamepad support that, you know, people didn't seem to really like that much, even in the armored edition from launch.
Yeah. Right, but that was kind of a, you know, like, poorly thought out. Maybe they've learned a lot of things. Maybe the gamepad support is going to be much better.
Maybe they've learned how to do online for Wii U. No. So I wouldn't count on that. I think it'll end up being an inferior port, which is really a shame, because the Batman series is great. I will play it either way, regardless. So, that brings us to our final pick, and that one's from Guillaume.
Yeah, I'm gonna... Perhaps I'm going to stick to my guns and my positive preview of Wii Party U.
I thought you were going to go Donkey Kong.
Of course I'm going to buy that. But I guess Wii Party U is the other game that I'm not going to miss. It's going to be like while the Wonderful 101 is going to provide me with the single player game that I want, Wii Party U, I think, is going to be fantastic when having people around. And I just can't wait. Like, I know that you've played, Johnny, the demo of the game where you have to basically guess what face the other person is making. You called it dumb, but I call you dumb.
It didn't make sense to me. I didn't care for it.
It was so much fun, even with strangers. So I can't begin to imagine just, you know, like having a couple of drinks and being with friends and just, you know, having a blast going through those. And, you know, the rest of the games are going to be fun too. The original Wii Party was really like an overlooked gem, I think. There were so many great ideas in there. There's going to be a lot of new games. There's going to be a lot of returning games, although they look different this time around. Like, I could not get the guy to let me play Spot the Sneak, which is a game in the original where you were basically like four players in a graveyard. There are zombies everywhere, and everyone is being chased by zombies except one person who the zombies kind of ignore, but has to pretend that he's being chased by zombies, because at the end, everyone is going to vote for who the sneak is.
That's a good idea.
That's a great mode. And I saw that mode in the new one. Like, it was in the menu, but it had nothing to do with zombies. So I'm very, very curious about that.
The alternate title could be Undead Hide and Seek.
And you know, like, it's kind of similar to one of the mini games in that Wario, Made in Wario. What is that game called? Game and Wario.
Yeah.
I think there's a similar mini game in there that's kind of the same principle, but it's in Game and Wario, so I'm never gonna play it.
Right.
So yeah,
Wii Party U. Hey, yep. I've heard some very positive things about it on Connectivity, and I know that Wii Party, the first one, got a lot of critical buzz, even though, you know, it didn't seem to really capture the public spirit very much, and none of us really played it or talked about it at the time.
I just had way more fun playing it than I ever did playing a Mario Party game. But then again, I don't have a long history with that franchise. I played 8. Whatever the first Wii one was.
It's hard to keep track of them, yeah.
Yeah, and then I played 2, like, on the Virtual Console, and it still was, like, it was slow. It was, and the mini games aren't that interesting. It's just, like, timing things or mash the button as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything like that in Wii Party. It's all, like, much, you know, much more elaborate concepts.
Nice.
To me, to talk about games like this, all of these U series games just sound like really commanding. We Party U. Then you really need to come up with a new naming convention.
Well, then We Fit You is very distressing.
We Fit You is troubling.
Oh my god, I never thought of it that way.
It puts the lotion in the basket.
I immediately thought of it that way.
Oh, lovely. Thanks for taking it there, James. Well, as you can tell, there are plenty of interesting Wii U games coming out, maybe not as many as we'd like, and maybe not some of the ones that we would prefer to be coming out this holiday season, but I think those of us who have the system will certainly be looking at 2 or 3 games that, you know, are pretty high on the list, and that's, you know, a veritable wealth of options compared to most of this year. For Wii U owners. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. The whole thing kicks off with Pikmin 3 this weekend, which should be out by the time you hear this episode. And I know I'll be getting it and talking about it next time. So it feels like Wii U is maybe starting to crawl back to life, at least in terms of, you know, stuff to do on it. I don't know if any of this will translate into sales, except maybe Mario, but at least we're getting to enjoy it again and play new, fresh stuff on it. So, yeah. So that's going to wrap up our segment here and indeed the episode. Before we go, I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been sending emails. We've gotten an unusual number of emails this week and very, very interesting high-quality emails as well. So we will be catching up on those very soon, and we truly do appreciate all of the people who write in. And you can send your email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And also wanted to announce the results of our latest retroactive poll. Pandora's Tower is the winner by about a 2-to-1 margin over anything else. It really got out ahead, especially right at the end there. So Pandora's Tower, a game that James has talked about, but the rest of us have not really played. It had been sort of on my wish list anyway, so it's a good excuse for me to go pick it up. And we'll be talking about that hopefully in just a few weeks towards the end of August. Otherwise, the second place vote getter in that poll was Wii Sports Resort, which I know some people weren't crazy about being on the list, but I think would have been interesting, and that game will carry forward to a second chance poll coming up eventually. So anyway, we'll be playing Pandora's Tower. If you'd like to play along with us, get your copy now. You will have some time to play it for sure.
We mention that it's not an RPG?
It is not an RPG. None of the options
are
RPGs.
No, it's a gut-eating action platforming game.
Yeah.
It's an action game. Where you eat guts.
People are still confused. Like, I still see a lot of complaining in the thread about, of course one of the two RPGs won. There were no RPGs in the list.
I've talked about it on the show. It's not an RPG. I
know. Some people thought it was, but trust me, we very intentionally did not put any RPGs
on
the list.
Well, you very intentionally. I'm always willing to put Ogre Battle 64 back on the list. Let's just do it again. I have more lectures to give out.
No, let's play the SNES game.
Extra credit, yeah. All right, so anyway, that is going to wrap up the show. Thank you so much, Kim, for being our first-time guest here on RFN.
Yay! It was fun.
We will look forward to more articles from you on the website about undead bowling and other things.
You know it.
And hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's all, folks. Thanks again. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Later.
Okay, James, it's time. You can wake up now.
Oh, John, you're breaking up there for a second.
Yeah, we're done with Super Metroid.
Okay, you're back. Yeah. All right, so I've got...
So, Kim, why don't...
Oh, boy.
No, I was... What? Well, you can go, James.
No. I want to go last. So, yeah, sorry. That was my mistake.
You prefer. Okay.
Hey,
it did kind of work as a segment.
You broke up and said, hey, James. I'm like, is it me? I thought...
I can't really understand Johnny at the moment. The connection is really bad. The baby.